This is Guildcast, episode 40, for August 7th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean. I think it's pretty fair to guess that since this show is 2 days late, that it's yet another Skype show. This time the topic is the monk, and who better to have with us discussing the monk but Loudon Swain, the healing super freak himself. I'll play our conversation a bit later, but I wanted to go over the usual updates and game news and all that first. One person who has to be mentioned this week was Legendaire Sanon. Plus, I took a trip down to the deep with the guild, the Radicals Against Tyrants, and I wanted to thank those guys for going down there with me. And speaking of the deep, I hope everyone got a chance to try out the Elite Mission weekend this last weekend. I tried both Urgoz's Warren a few times and the deep once or twice. I talk a little bit more about this during our Skype conversation, but I think I enjoyed Urgoz's a little bit more. And I think for this week's poll on the main page, I'll ask which elite mission people preferred. I seem to hear preferences to both sides, so I'm just curious about that. And now on to the updates. On Tuesday, August 1st, they restored the original cycle of maps to the random and team arenas now that the Nightfall PvP preview event is over. So basically they took out the Nightfall arenas. They added new guild emblems based on the winning concepts from the recent Factions Guild Emblem Contest. If you get a chance, check out some of these. None of them really grabbed my attention enough to, you know, change my guild's emblem, but if you see that one beaver one in there, which was kind of a humorous emblem, it still cracks me up every time I see it. And I know I'll get plenty of opportunity to see it, since it seems like everyone has put it on their guild cape lately. And going along with this, there's now another guild emblem contest that's starting up. From the official website, they say that up to 12 of the best symbols will be placed permanently into the Guild Wars emblem catalog and will appear in Guild Wars Nightfall upon release or in an update soon after release. When added to the game, the emblems will be available for use by players around the world. In addition to inclusion in the game and recognition on our global websites, winners will also receive a full set of the 8 collectible Guild Wars skill pins. So you can read more info about that in a link that I'll put on the show notes for today. I've never entered a contest before for the game itself, but I might actually do that for this one. So anyway, back to the updates. They also fixed a bug that caused henchmen and certain NPCs to run incorrectly into the midst of combat. So does that mean that Alicia's not a tank anymore? Because this has been going on for quite a long time, and I pretty much started to accept it by now. But that's good. That's a good fix. They fixed a bug that caused obsidian keys and phantom keys to stop dropping in the Fissure of Woe and the Underworld. They fixed a bug that allowed players to earn gladiator title points in the Zacian arenas. They fixed a bug that prevented teams smaller than 4 from entering the team arena. They fixed a bug that prevented some teams from entering the Heroes Ascent tournament. They fixed a bug that caused some players to crash during cinematics. And they removed all PvP spears and scythes from player inventories. And for the skill update on that day, basically all they did was they restored the temporary skill changes from the preview weekend back to normal. And they also made Assassin's Promise no longer recharge the caster's skills when the caster dies. So then, on Thursday, August 3rd, they fixed a bug that caused some clients to crash during the elite missions. They eased excessive messaging filter restrictions for party chat, guild chat, and whispers. Restrictive filters for these forms of chat were inadvertently reintroduced in the previous update. They returned the Zacian Supply Masters to the Great Temple of Balthazar. The Supply Masters will remain until August 7th at 12:01 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, which will be very soon after I release this episode. they fixed a bug that caused crackling sounds and static on some sound cards. I know that several people claim that the crackling is still present, so I'm not sure how much of a fix this actually was. And then they added support for additional European credit cards to the online store. And finally, on Friday, August 4th, they modified henchmen respawn behavior in PvP battles. Henchmen with 60% death penalty will not respawn if they die now. They fixed a bug in the elite missions that caused rare items to drop less frequently than intended during the elite weekend event. There was also some info on August 1st concerning Nightfall pre-release bonus package, which should be available on September 15th. And according to the website, they say it will contain a Guild Wars Play Now key for a 10-hour or 14-day trial of Guild Wars Prophecies and Guild Wars Factions. Also, a Guild Wars Nightfall bonus key, which will provide one additional character slot for a Guild Wars Nightfall account, as well as two exclusive items for the new professions: a Fiery Sun Spear of Shelter for the Paragon, and an Icy Soulbreaker of Enchanting for the Dervish. And finally, it will include a mini strategy guide, concept art, screenshots, in-game renders of characters and items, a preview trailer, wallpapers, lore, quick reference guide, music, and more. And they also provide a little bit more of the storyline teaser for Nightfall. Guild Wars Nightfall takes place on the continent of Alona, land of the Golden Sun. It is a nation comprised of three great provinces. The island province of Istin is the home of a vibrant people who live among the monuments of an ancient empire. The military province of Khorna, under the command of its great leader, War Marshal Varish, hugs the shores of the mighty river Elan. And in the rugged lands to the north, the princes of Vabi rule from their opulent citadels. Alona is a land of wealth and power, protected by its champions, the Order of the Sunspears. In Guild Wars Nightfall, Alona has fallen under the shadow of an evil outcast god. Against the encroaching desolation of an infernal realm, the people of Alona will need more than a hero to save them. They will need a hero to lead them, for Nightfall is at hand. So before I start the conversation, I'll play these two voicemails that I got earlier this week.
Hey Sean, Lady Sinea, Solero, this is Canton 101 calling from Bangor, Maine. I'm just calling as a bit of an information for everyone, sort of a correction on episode 39, horrible left of voice message, pertaining to World of Warcraft. If you have an inactive account in World of Warcraft, they will not delete it. I'm not sure how long they'll do that for, but I went inactive for about 4 months and then started paying again, and all my account was still there, my characters are still there. So that is not the case. There was a thread in the forums a couple of weeks ago that was pertaining to why Guild Wars wasn't up there so far as MMOs go, and I'm still sticking with the theory that it has to do with advertising and PC Gamer. But anyways, Sean, love the podcast, keep up the good work, and waiting for episode 40.
Hey Sean, what's up? This is Sally's Grown, the ritualist level 14. My second profession is a ranger. I'm currently in Zen Invasion. Anyone wants to go there? And man, that new campaign Nightfall is pretty cool. I really want to get that one. I really don't know what else to say, but hope everybody's looking forward to that. And I think I might go Paragon or what's the other one? The other class, Paragon and Dirge, whatever. I'm gonna go Dirge first now. And well, you can go. Hopefully, I see like 1,000 of those dirges running around. Well, anybody needs help, I've got the email dbernie@bowseth.net or on AIM STTCLUNKY or on Yahoo STTCLUNKY 2000. contact me via those. If I'm not on there, I'll get to you on the site or whatever. And hope to see you in the next campaign, guys. Bye.
Okay, this will be our monk show, and with us today we have Loudon Swain.
Hello, Loudon fans.
Wait, I didn't agree to this.
Well, we snuck him in behind your back, because we knew you wouldn't agree to it.
Oh, great.
And, of course, we have Lady Sinea.
Hello, everyone.
And what I wanted to do is I just wanted to talk kind of basically about some of the basics of the monk, you know, and maybe go over some of the attributes, and then we could talk more about some advanced things with the monk, more advanced techniques and everything. So what I figured is maybe with the basics, Loudon could talk, and then with the advanced stuff, Lady Sinea could talk.
That sounds good, yeah.
Where's the hang-up button?
No, that'll be good, because we don't want Loudon talking too much, because, you know, this is going to become Loudoncast.
Nice. Hey, do you have stats on episode downloads? Because I'd be shocked if this wasn't your most popular one to date.
Yeah, we'll have to check that afterwards. Make sure.
No, this episode's going to make our ratings go down. ArenaNet is going to cancel our show, and we're going to get fired.
We'll have to do a Google search on Loudon Swain, and I bet this episode will surpass the actual band Loudon Swain.
Nice.
All right, so either you guys want to go over the basics of the monk, the attributes and everything, since you're the experts.
Well, the important thing about a monk has divine favor, which makes it a more powerful healer. A lot of people have tried to do, like, elementalist monks because they have more energy, but they don't get the benefit of the monk's divine favor. Plus, it takes longer for their energy to regen. So even though they have more of it initially, a monk can continue to heal a party longer.
Yeah, you get a lot more economy on your heals because the divine favor, you don't have to spam as often.
Yeah, it says that for each attribute level of divine favor, you get an additional 3.2 health. And I guess that's pretty exact, but they add that to each ally, to the health of each ally, each time the monk casts a monk spell.
So it's like if you put all your points in healing and divine favor, you've got those two maxed, you know? Plus any runes that you have, you can get a pretty powerful healer going.
Yeah, I usually use a minor divine favor, and I think you get like 42 extra per heal when you got it at 13.
Yeah, that helps out a lot. And then the rest of the attributes are pretty self-explanatory as far as just depending on what kind of monk you want to be, you know, between healing prayers, protection prayers, and smiting prayers. And not too many people really do smiting anymore. Well, except for PvP. But for PvE, there's not really...
And farming.
Yeah, and farming for Shield of Judgment, things like that.
But yeah, it seems like primarily there's healing monks out there. Occasionally you run across an active protection monk, and usually people aren't bonding by default unless you ask them to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's because people expect you. When they see monk, they expect you to heal.
Right.
It seems like if you do anything else, they get a little crazy about it.
Because healers are so needed all the time.
Especially early on in the game. You know, later on, you can play the Boon Prot or other forms of the Protection Prayer Monk and get away with it, you know, in a larger group. But earlier on in the game, you pretty much want to just stick with healing.
Yeah, that's a lot of what's available to you, too, early on. You don't have the energy management you need to run some of the other builds. You just got to spam heals.
So, did you guys want to talk about any certain specific favorite builds of yours, or without giving away any trade secrets?
My favorite is just, we call it the 5 energy spam heal, where you put in as many 5 energy heals as you can get. Healing Whisper, Orison, Word of Healing. Word of Healing is huge for most healing builds. And then Duenas, things like that. So, and then complement that with Breeze and Seed. You know, they're a little more expensive, but they're the ones that you can usually put on somebody, and then you get a little breathing room because you can forget about them for 5 or 10 seconds because they're going to be all right. So that's the standard Loudon Swain healing build.
I usually bring Vigorous Spirit, too. It only costs 5 energy, and not as many people bring it.
Yeah, I usually bring Vigorous Spirit and Healing Seed, both of those. They're almost like they should be protection prayer spells almost, but I find they work really well, especially if you have a tank.
Well, anyone who's doing a lot of damage or attacking a lot is going to benefit from Vigorous Spirit. Like Rangers, because they'll barrage. Mesmers, because they cast quickly.
Yeah. or a frenzy warrior as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like lately I've been doing more bonding in some of the high-level missions, groups of eight, when you got a healer or two. Bonds help a lot to negate damage, so kind of getting back into that. I haven't done that for a long time.
You know what I don't know very much about is the Spirit Bond Monk. I saw a post of a build of it somewhere, but how does it work? You want the enemies to attack you for a certain amount of damage?
Basically, you want as little protection as possible, because you want them to hit you for over 60. And if you get hit for over 60 damage, then you get healed, you know, for more than that, depending on how much you have in Spirit Bond. So, like right now, I have 10 in Prot, and for any time I take damage over 60, I get healed for 80. So you just got to find high-level mobs to beat on you. And you want, I wear Nubiland armor on my legs and feet and headpiece, and I don't wear arms or chest. And then the cool thing about it is PS protects you, so that Spirit Bond kicks in before PS negates damage, and then PS negates it, and so you only take 10%. So even though you're taking potentially less than 60 damage, as long as it was 60 before PS hits it, then Spirit Bond kicks in and you're protected and get healed.
Interesting. So you're really not getting hit for 60 after all.
Well, you get hit for whatever your health is. So, you know, I mean, it makes, you can take 10% damage. So, like right now, my health is 440. So if they hit me for 100, then PS will protect me and, you know, I'll take 44 damage, but I'll also get healed for 80 on that hit. So you can tank pretty much any sized mob as long as there's guys doing more than 60 damage to you, which
and
makes
then
it cooler.
You just...
Well, it makes it better than the 55 in that aspect, because you can tank an unlimited sized mob. The downside is you can't tank a weak mob. So, like, if you have SS on you that's hitting you for 37 a pop, you're going to get eaten alive, whereas with a 55, Healing Breeze could possibly counter that.
And then what do you use? You just use a Shield of Judgment and Zealot's Fire and a couple of
others? That's for, like, trolls, I'll use Shield of Judgment and Zealot's Fire. If I'm farming a warrior boss, which it also works good for, a lot of times I'll put on Ignorance to negate his heal sig with a Mez Second.
Yeah, I found that build really works well for the Troll Cave. And then also, there's a quest in Factions, I think it's Song of Stone or something like that, and where you just basically fight wardens around House of Helter and
out there in Arborstone.
Yeah, Arborstone, that area. That build works really well for that, because you're basically going around from group to group of wardens and fighting them, and the wardens hit for pretty high damage. But the only downfall that I've found is exactly like you mentioned, where if you come across something that hits for 40 damage, you're basically screwed.
Yeah, there's a lot of conditions out there too, so usually it's worthwhile to take something to like purge conditions, because the wardens will set traps and stuff like that can bleed you out if you're not careful, because with the Spirit Bond, you don't really have a way to heal yourself. And all your spells are 10 and 15 energy, so you can't really spam them to get the Divine Favor healing.
That's why I think it's a good build and all, and it's cheap, and it works really well, especially like for the Troll Caves, you know, if you want to just make some money and go over there. But it does have a lot of downfalls like that right there, with, like you said, conditions, unless you bring purge conditions. But it does have a lot of loopholes where you gotta basically pick an area that you want to farm, and then learn, you know, what all the mobs use, and learn how to counter it. Which I guess, you know, you do that with anything, but with this, it's really pretty fragile in that way.
Yeah, I just like it because it's cheap and easier for when you have a guildie who just made a monk and wants to start farming now, and it's a lot cheaper for them to set it up. Especially, it's not as bad now, because monk runes are not that bad, but, you know, compared to back in the day when you were looking at 30 or 40k to get your 55 set up, that was too daunting for a lot of people.
The superior runes actually have gone back up a little bit. They're like at 10 each now.
Yeah, I use majors on my Spirit Bond, though. I use a major Smite and a major Divine Favor, and
that
works just fine.
That doesn't make it cheaper, yeah.
Because those are just 100 each. The Spirit Bond doesn't work in the UW either, from what I hear. I haven't tried it, but apparently a lot of times the smites and the squids don't do enough damage, so you struggle a little bit.
Oh.
Didn't you and Tam try that, Sanea?
Yeah, that's right. He did try it, but, yeah, we couldn't get past the graspings.
So, yeah, 55 is still the best. Still my first true love. So, off topic a bit, but I went to UW the other night. I read about a Famine Ranger build instead of taking a SS Necro. So I went with the Gildy and we tried it out. And that was pretty cool. The Ranger casts Famine and then Sympathetic Visage and Ancestral Visage to get the mobs down to zero energy. So every time they hit, once they're at zero energy, they take 37 damage because of Famine. So it can be pretty fast if you aggro a large mob.
That's really funny because a couple episodes ago we were talking about what in the world would Famine ever be useful for.
Yeah, it works pretty well. You can't tank the colds with it, though, because they don't do melee damage, so SV doesn't drain them. But it's pretty good on the smites and the cows, because the more enemies you got on you, the more damage they take and the quicker they die.
Okay.
So we'll have to try that out. Should be cool. Since you have a ranger, and I would never stoop to playing one, so looks like you're on the Famine build.
For hate mail, please send it to Loudon Swain at...
imonkbetterthanyou.com.
Oh! Let's talk about the Deep. I hated that place. That place sucks.
I wasn't a big fan of it either, although the fact that 11 of the 12 of us hadn't gone before probably didn't help a whole lot.
I like Urgaz's Warren a lot better.
Yeah, we went and did that after we got out of the Deep.
That one just seemed like a giant tombs farm to me. It wasn't really that interesting. It's like, okay, bunch of mobs out there, someone go pull them in, we'll take them out, then we'll go pull another one, take them out. Just really kind of repetitive, and you're just doing your one little job and don't even really have to pay attention or anything. Both those missions, from what I saw, which isn't much, so I could be totally wrong, but it just seemed like there was kind of one path through them, and it's not like Foe where you go in there and do the first quest, and then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? The beach, the Wailing Lord Forest, the book quest, go to the forge. You know, there's just like a lot of options, and I didn't see that in either of the elite missions.
Yeah, I think I'm not planning on going back to either of those places a lot. I would rather go to FOW or something.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
I kind of liked Urgaz's Warren just because of the fact that it was kind of like Tombs, and I'm a big fan of the Tombs, but I like the way it was like that, where you could just be organized. Well, if you were organized, but I went down there with a Barrage pet group, which is, you know, basically a Tombs farming group, and it seemed to work really well. And we went down there with Sanea, we went down there and didn't do too bad, I guess. But the Deep, I don't know, it's just... The Deep just seemed like it was just insanity. I don't know.
I don't like the aspect of the fact that we were all split up. It's like you see your party members getting hit, and there's nothing you can do about it because you're far away from them. Like, I was in one room spamming heal party on anyone that I could reach, but half the team was too far away.
Yeah, and you can only spam heal party for so long, especially when you don't have any kind of energy support.
Yeah, well, I had a Blood is Power Necro with me, we could only do so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to try with a group that knew what they were doing, you know, where you get an experienced group and take along two or three people that haven't done it before so they can learn it, you know, because I think of the first time I went to FOW with a random group and we totally just got schooled because no one knew what they were doing. And slowly over time, as I went with more experienced groups, I got it down, so... Now, when I go, you know, we take four or five experienced people, and then we can take along a few people who want to learn it, and that way everybody benefits.
Right.
I think that was a good thing about this weekend, is it got a lot of people's feet wet, where they could go down there and at least get a little familiar with the area, and then once, you know, it'll kind of weed out the ones who think that they're good enough, or maybe want to pursue these elite missions, and then they can go back after this weekend, and go back down, you know, like exactly like you said. It's something I might plan on doing, but I'm not sure.
It was hard to coordinate, I thought. I was trying to get the 12 people organized last night, and I don't know, what'd it take, 60 or 90 minutes to get everything going? It was kind of frustrating.
It was like an hour, yeah. Finally, we just said, screw it, let's just go and see what happens.
Yeah, I remember. I was just so frustrated at the end. I was like, grab any level 20 and enter the mission. Let's just go. Maybe that's why we didn't do
between,
so hot.
Well, that could be too. Fortunately, between our guilds, we had plenty of monks too. So what did we take? We brought 4 monks.
Yeah.
And then we had, it was funny, we had extra monks. So we had some people swap out and be, you know, necros and rangers and stuff.
And hammer warriors.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You didn't play monk. I didn't know you could do anything other than monking.
Me neither.
I can't. That's why we did terrible.
We knew it was Loudon's fault.
I can run. That's what I do on the warrior. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd try the deep again if it was a group that knew what they were doing. But as far as just a open invite to the first 12 who want to come, no way.
Yeah, but we only picked up, like, 3 randoms, right?
Right.
But even so.
Yeah, none of us knew what we were doing, though.
And I don't know if I really like the 12-person party. It's just a larger group to worry about what they're all doing, keep them all coordinated.
Yeah, in the deep, when you're split up into the 4 rooms, when you're not all on the... If you're not all on voice together, it kind of negates the calling system because there's only 1 active call, but there's 4 mini parties there. So it can be hard to coordinate your team if everyone's not on voice. And the party box also takes up a lot of real estate on the screen, actually, when there's 12 people and pets and stuff like that going.
Yeah, I had the whole thing expanded along the right-hand side on my screen.
Have you guys thought anything about the monk's role in Nightfall? Like mixing with the Paragon or the Dervish?
The monk's role in Nightfall is going to be to skill cap and then go back to Tyria.
Woohoo! But we'll also have to get the protector title too and then go back home.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Alright, so what res do you guys prefer?
Rebirth.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah, I go kind of situational. I go rebirth if it's likely that someone's going to get whacked, you know, away from the party. But I kind of like having... Resurrection chant, because you can sometimes use it in the middle of battle and they come back in a semi-decent state and it doesn't totally sap your energy, although it is an 8-second cast and sometimes committing 8 seconds to one spell is too much.
The whole reason that I set up my secondary as Ritualist is for Flesh of My Flesh. I think that's a good res for the heat of battle, because it takes half your health away and it gives it to the person you rezzed, and it gives, I forgot how much energy now, but it doesn't black out your spells like Rebirth does. And it has a range, a pretty good range, almost like Rebirth does, although it doesn't teleport them to you. But it's a pretty good rez for the heat of battle, I think.
Yeah, that's the downside to Resurrection Chant, is it's got half range, so it pretty much is... a total heat of combat res.
Yeah, during combat, unless there are multiple monks who are still actively healing, I'm not going to res in the middle of battle. I'll let somebody else use a signet or somebody else use one of their resurrection skills. Because if you stop in the middle of the battle to start resing someone, 3 more people could die if you're the only one keeping them alive.
Yeah, totally. Ideally, there's a tank or something that has resurrect or something like that, so they can just stand there and hold aggro and get people up, although it never seems to happen that way.
Right. But what I'll do with rebirth is I will start casting it, and then as soon as it finally activates and the person is being teleported, I'll run in the opposite direction, so then you get some extra range pulling them away from the battle.
Yeah, that's another good reason to carry Word of Healing, too, when rebirth is your res. Because it doesn't take very long to get 5 energy back, and they're still at really low health, and then you can boost them up pretty good with Word of Healing on them as soon as you get 5
yeah.
energy.
Because with the monk's usual energy recharge, you're back up to full energy pretty fast.
And another thing you want to do that, I know we all know this, but several people might not know it, is when you're using rebirth or any kind of res, you want to hold down control, let people know that you're casting that. And a lot of times it'll help. Like when I play a Blood is Power Necro and I see that someone is you know, getting ready to cast Rebirth, or they announce that they're casting Rebirth, I'll usually give them one of those Blood is Power to get their energy back up really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get the party up faster, too, so that two or three people aren't trying to res the same person. If there's multiple dead people, you can distribute.
Yes, that's true, too. And the henchmen will, the necromancer henchmen will bip you as well when they see that you are rebirthing.
Yeah, Eve?
Mm-hmm.
I think she's the only one that does that.
So what do you guys think about Healing Breeze? I have a few guildies that love it and a few that hate it. And I usually carry it. I like it. I don't think it should be used as a primary heal. I think a lot of novice monks use that as their primary heal, and it just kills you because it's got 10 energy, and the heal is over time. So if someone's taking damage, you can't necessarily counter it. But I like it for countering conditions and hexes that are slow degenning.
Oh, yeah, I like it. I have Healing Breeze, Vigorous Spirit as a couple of my usual ones that I will cast the enchantments. I'll stop and cast the enchantments on people if they ask me to. But then, otherwise, you know, if they're getting low, then you can use Word of Healing, Orison, Duana's Kiss.
I like Healing Breeze for situations where somebody is continuously taking damage. Like, I'll cast Healing Seed, Vigorous mm-hmm. Spirit on a tank that's maybe out there. Maybe he's the only tank, and he's taking all the damage. And I'll cast those two on him, and then maybe Healing Breeze on him also, so that he'll be continuously healed while I can concentrate on other people, healing them with Word of Healing or something like that. Works out pretty good, pretty well.
Yeah, right. That's the beauty of, like, Seed and Breeze and those, is you put it on someone, and then you can move away from them for a minute, you know, and come back and know that they're probably going to be all right for 5 or 10 seconds.
I think in a lot of situations, using the Healing Breeze, the enchantments and such are just fine, as long as you're not facing, like, mesmers that are going to start shattering them. Or if you're in PvP, they'll, you know, I'll watch and see if the enchantments are getting removed.
Yeah, usually PvP is spike damage, so you need a counter, like Infuse or Word of Healing, that slow
right
recharge
away
over time isn't very helpful. Mm-hmm. Or so I hear. What would I know about PvP? So another thing I've seen people do quite a bit is the tank is taking a lot of damage, so they go to put Healing Seed on him, and they get whacked in the time that Healing Seed is casted, because it's got a fairly long cast time. So a lot of times, if the tank is below half and I think he needs Seed, I'll Word of Healing him first to get
Word
his health back
first,
up.
Yeah.
Yep, give a buffer, and then drop Seed on him. Because if he's under half and taking heavy damage and you go with Seed, he's going to be dead before it's on him.
Or even if you get it on him, he won't get any benefits out of it soon enough.
Mm-hmm. I also like having Duanas, too, to zap him after the fact. Because you get that bonus when they, you know, when they're enchanted. So
mm-hmm.
if you Word of Healing him, then you drop Seed on him, then you can give him a Duana if it's needed. All right, so preferred weapon and offhand, that might be a good thing to touch on.
Yeah.
Since you brought it up before.
I use Bronz, the wand, and then also the collector's offhand that you can get in the desert.
Yeah, the 2020.
For healing, right.
Same thing I use.
And then I use Roth's Icon for protection.
When I run bonding, I usually use Totem Axe or the Katana, and then the Collector plus 15 energy minus 1 regen plus 30 health.
Ooh, I don't like the regen, the negative 1 regen for bonding.
I don't know. I like that extra 15. Usually works out all right. Although a lot of times I turn off Divine Favor, Divine Boon when there's no combat going on.
Oh, okay.
To offset it. And then, you know, if you have everyone bonded and you're running Balths, energy's not usually an issue while it's a big mob.
I'll do that a lot where I'll use for all my casters, I'll use the offhands and the wand or whatever that has the plus 15 on both of them. It gives me that plus 30 altogether, but then it also takes 2 away from regen. And then I'll have a second set that's just like a normal set, you know what I mean? So I'll use the set with the plus 30 at first, then I'll switch over to the second set to regen, you know, and then go back if I need to.
Yeah, I do that a lot on UW Necro.
I do that with my Necro, yeah.
Just spam SS all over the place and then switch to a good wand to you know, do a little bit of damage and regen.
And then I also have Kepket's Refuge and Wenceslas Faith. I forget which one's which. One's protection and one will... it has the enchantment plus 20. And I'll just use those depending on what...
That's Wenceslas's.
Oh, okay. I'll use those depending on what the situation is. I'll usually leave one in storage because I don't need them both.
My monk uses Wenceslas only because, you know, I used to be tomb farm crazy a while back, and I had like 5 of those, so I gave most of them away as prizes, but I kept one for myself.
Yeah, it's like you don't use it all the time, but it's good to have around. That's the one that has the enchantment plus 20?
I believe so. It's not the protection one. That's the, between the two you were talking about. That's Kepket's.
Yeah, that must be Kepket's. Well, I use the that staff for when, you know, I hardly ever need it, but if perchance I might die while 55ing, I use that. That's the one I switched to.
Oh, you go to a staff when you have DP?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Interesting. I usually go with a minus 20 so that I'm at like 13 instead of 33. Minus 20 health offhand.
Yeah, I don't carry it because I don't want extra stuff in my inventory.
I saw a post the other day that was kind of interesting about a 6 hit point monk where you get minus 30 DP and then equip a plus 45 health offhand. And they say you can tank pretty much without breeze because mending is enough to keep you going. Haven't really tried it, though. Thought it sounded interesting.
Although, saw a video of something like that where the person just went out and died a couple of times and then cast their enchantments on themselves.
Yeah, it seems that you'd need to do it for, like, taking on a specific boss, because if you just went and took out a mob, then your DP is going to be back to who knows what level, and it would be hard to maintain a 5 health, and then you're out there with mending and no breeze, and you're kind of in trouble. Because a lot of times, even in UW, if you tank a large group with DP, you got to kind of watch it, because as your health climbs, I usually switch from the switch to the minus 50 back on in the middle of the fight, just so my health stays low.
Yeah, because you're back up, you know, to 80 health again before you know it.
Yep. Do you guys run Healing Touch in your healing builds?
No, I don't.
Usually not, because I find it's only really very useful for healing myself and sometimes the caster, but I like having the range.
Yeah, I have it in just specifically for healing me, because if I've got aggro on me, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll healing touch myself to get a little bit of buffer back, and then I'll put breeze on myself and then run. And usually the healing touch gives me a buffer to stay alive, and then breeze can get my health back up while I'm running from whoever's on me.
I just use Orison for that.
You get a lot more out of healing touch, don't you?
Maybe. But when you only got 8 slots to think about, you know.
Right. So you guys probably got Vigorous.
Yes, that's right. I'm using Vigorous. And plus, I can cast that on myself for 5 energy and heal myself while I'm healing other people, basically.
Yeah, Orison's a 1-second cast, and Healing Touch is 3/4. Orison does a little bit more, but Divine Healing from Healing Touch is doubled. So you get a little more out of Healing Touch.
So you get more if you have your Divine Favor up.
Right, which I usually run 16 heal, 13 divine on a healing build. What about energy management? I got a lot of guildies that are always like, what do you use for energy management? What's your energy management? You know, like, go with a Mez Secondary for Inspired Hex or Mantra of Recall, or I think it's Mantra of Recall. Is that the one that gives you back energy after 20 seconds? Or, you know, channeling.
That's an elite.
Right. And I was like, I don't really use...
I wouldn't swap that out for my... Swap that in for my Word of Healing.
Right. Me either. Because then you'd need heal other.
Word of Healing's too valuable for that.
So, but I really, rarely have energy issues with the 5 energy build. If you use it smart, I haven't found the need for an energy management slot. So just kind of curious if you guys did.
Me either, especially with Breeze and Vigorous. You have breathing time to recharge. But for energy management, I think a lot of it's just knowing what to cast when. Because, for instance, if you've got three guys who need to be healed, and you've got eight energy, you're not going to waste it, like, casting one heal other. You'll want to cast 2 5 energy spells, and while you're doing that, you'll probably have an additional 5 recharged by then. So it's like, don't waste your energy on something that's not going to be efficient.
Right. Well, and, I mean, it's smart healing, too. If you have a tank and a soft caster, both with a lot of aggro, you might as well heal the tank because he could probably survive it, whereas you drop Word of Healing on, you know, like a Mesmer or an Ellie that's got two warriors pounding on him, it's just going to eat right through that, and they're going to be dead. So sometimes you have to let someone die for the good of the party. You just got to choose the right one.
Another person died on Loudon's Watch.
We come back to Loudon doesn't heal rangers.
Hi, WoW Prince Alero, bringing the new PvP section to Guildcast. Hopefully something many of you will enjoy, as I enjoy making. So, the monk as we're talking about in this episode is actually one of the most important aspects of almost any PvP build. Eyeways don't really use them, but I don't really plan on going into the eyeways that much. Hopefully I can stick away from having to talk about that. But the monks are pretty much necessary throughout whatever else you need to make in PvP. And it's not often said that you don't need a monk, it's how many do we need. One's usually not enough because they'd be doing so much healing that their energy would be gone pretty much instantly. And two, sometimes it can be better, but my magic number, at least for most of the builds I do, is 3. It gives you a nice specialization. Some builds do use 2, and I'm not saying I've never just been in a 2-monk group, but with a 3-monk group, you can do a little bit more. You can have one person do pure protection, and then you can have your other two do healing, with maybe the second healer doing a little bit of prot, or maybe just a pure healer. But monking in PvP, I've found, has been helped, at least in my experiences with my PvP-only monk, to be helped by one little tip, and that is the layout of your keyboard. In PvE, the mouse can be used pretty much regularly in a PvE monk build, but in PvP, I find it, you can use the number pad for party selection, and it actually will help out with your PvP monking just a little bit. And how you would do that is you would go into your options screen, and under your select a party member, you would set your number pad up, actually, 1 through 8, being as the 1 through 8 in the party. And then what I do, personally, as a monk in PvP, is use my WASD to kind of maneuver and kite damage throughout the battle, kind of get away from whoever's attacking me, kind of dodge and weave throughout people, and I can still keep my eyes on this, and that actually is pretty good, because then you can go straight back up to your top row of numbers, to your skill bars, and use that as well, and select 1 through 8 on the number pad, and 1 through 8 on the top row of numbers on your keyboard, and it actually works pretty well. It gives you a lot of fast acting in a fast-paced PvP battle that you may not be able to work around in a PvE build. Although I do find it works pretty well in PvE. I've tried to make a monk a couple of times and just got bored, but it works pretty well in PvE as well. And also what I'd like to go into is a little bit of why people actually PvP. PvP, as many of the listeners know that have PvP'd, is very fast-paced and very exciting, and many people think that maybe those people aren't as into PvE, but actually, a lot of the hardcore PvP players know that unless you have a solid background in PvE, then your PvP career is just going to be very bad. I know I definitely got my monk to level, or not my monk, my ranger to level 20 before I really started seriously going into the Hall of Heroes, because I knew that through that, I would know what makes a good monk, what makes a bad monk in PvE, and I can relocate that into PvP. And really knowing the build in PvE really could help you out with strategies in PvP. I know I've been doing a lot more PvE than I have before, and that's just because I'm trying to figure out new ways to implement the Kanthan builds and the Kanthan skills into new builds for PvP. And it's actually been really fun. I've been able to help a couple of guildies out that have been stuck in a couple of parts of the game, and been help to a couple of new people that have come in and started playing, and it's actually pretty cool, and it's been a really nice experience. But through this, I also want to get groups of people that maybe can implement what I say here and really go at Hero's Ascent with a new perspective and really try to go and capture it for America or Europe or wherever you happen to be living. I know that Sean said before that there's people all across the world, but I'd like to actually capture it for us one time for the Guildcast listeners. And it's actually going to be pretty fun, and I hope that everybody enjoys this PvP section. I hope that maybe PvP monks can really start to get into it and really use this sort of to their advantage, some tips and tricks. And with this PvP section, as you may have noticed, I didn't really go over a build per se, because I want to leave the builds up to you. And I really think that building your character and building your team is really part of the fun of PvE, or not PvE, PvP, and that PvP can really be had better if you make your own, if you really go into a balanced build and just make it yourself. And I hope to do that with some people through this, and maybe connect with some people that would like to maybe think of a build, a balanced build, that would work to get the greatest number of listeners on at the same time in the same battle. That way we can have a little bit of fun with this. And also, before I go, I wanted to make notice to, and I hope I say this right, Javert Wickersham. I know that Sean usually does the shout-outs, but I wanted to do this because I saw him in Urgo's Warren this weekend, because I'm trying to get some money to put towards my guild and to put towards a couple of new characters in PvE so I can take them really dressed well and have the best stuff for them in PvP. Because even as a PvP player, taking PvE tunes into maybe Hero's Ascent, you still need some good weapons, and I'm trying to build up PvE tunes to go into PvP, kind of so I have that PvE background experience, even though I don't think I can ever say I'm making a monk other than a PvP only, but we'll see what happens. And just wanted to give a shout out to him and tell him that, yeah, I'm listening, and hopefully we can PvP sometime as well. And I hope this section's been as good as everybody's hoped. And just signing off, this has been Solero with your PvP update.
In this skills and build segment, I'm going to go over a build that we discussed during our Skype conversation, and that's the Spirit Bond Monk build. Since we went briefly over some strategies of it, I figured I'd go more into detail as far as what the build actually consists of. Now, I got this info straight from Glax, or Coogan on the forums, who's also an officer in my guild. He's the one who taught this to me, and he wrote up such a great guide for it that I just had to use it here, almost word for word. You can find more info on this build in the Guildcast Forums build section, or also on his build's farming website at glax, that's G-L-A-X-X, .wordpress, W-O-R-D-P-R-E-S-S, .com. And that's where he has some maps and some more pictures of everything you'll need. This farming build is called many things. These include 600 hit point monk, naked monk, and more. I like to call it Spirit Bond Monk. Call it what you want, but it's very effective. This is the new 55 monk, in my opinion. It is far superior and can take on several different types of mobs, unlike the 55 monk. The skills and setup are very similar to the 55 monk, as you will see. The goal of this monk build is to take lots of damage initially, but reduce it through protective spirit and still get healed from Spirit Bond. As for the equipment that you'll need the lowest level armor you can get. The runes and such may be set up differently, but if your armor is any better than the basic lowest AL armor, then you will fail. The point being that you want to take as much damage as possible. In fact, if you take any damage under 60, it'll actually be a bad thing. And don't use a chest or arm piece at all, because they're just not needed. Weapons don't really matter, but you can use a Wenslaw's Faith for the recharge mod and health. Now, as for skills, they vary depending on your secondary profession. You don't have to use any skills from your second profession on any of these, but they work the best that the way that they're presented here as a monk warrior. For the Arborstone Explorable, the Alona Reach Minotaurs, and the Troll Cave near Drachner's Forge, you can use the following setup. Protective Spirit, Spirit Bond, Shield of Judgment, Balanced Stance, Purge Conditions, Blessed Aura, Essence Bond, and Balthazar's Spirit. For your attribute setup, you'll want 15 in Smiting, 12 in Protection, and 10 in Divine Favor. Now again, like I mentioned, those can be tweaked a little bit with depending on what kind of runes you have on. Now notice that there's no secondary attribute points used here at all. This can be changed and adjusted according to the area you're farming and the monsters you're up against. A Mesmer secondary works well in most cases, though. Like, when you're farming trolls outside of Drachner's, you can switch Purge Conditions for Guardian and switch Balanced Stance for Ancestors or Sympathetic Visage. I believe all of these spells have been discussed before on the show, except for one, which is Spirit Bond, the namesake of this build. So I'll just go over that one in greater detail. And if you need to find out the information on the other spells in this build, you can refer back to previous shows that we've done concerning these monk spells. Now for Spirit Bond, for 8 seconds, whenever target ally takes more than 60 damage from a single attack or spell, that ally is healed for 40 to 88 health. This is a Protection Prayers enchantment spell that you can only get in factions. It has an energy cost of 10, activation time of a quarter of a second, and a recharge time of 2 seconds. You can buy this from Michiko in Canine Center, or capture it from Meryl Stoneweaver in the Arborstone Explorable area of Kanta. Now for a quick rundown of how to use this build. You first exit town. You cast Essence Bond, Balthazar's Spirit, and Blessed Aura on yourself. Then you go to your destination. You cast Protective Spirit and Spirit Bond. You run around until you can get a decent-sized group of enemies on you. And you let them hit you for a bit. And then you use Balanced Stance if you're... that's only if you're in Arborstone, you use Balanced Stance. Then you throw up Shield of Judgment, and you just keep maintaining Spirit Bond and Protective Spirit as they recharge. And you also want to do that with Shield of Judgment, too, until your enemies drop, as Shield of Judgment is your primary damage dealer. Now, I've personally tried this build several times, and it works really great. I'd say this would be a nice build for mid-level characters, since there's hardly any cost involved in the items, and, you know, the armor you can get in Ascalon City. But the only hitch to that theory is that the capping of Shield of Judgment is, it's a pretty hard cap in Mineral Springs, or at least it can take a while. You'd first need to get to Granite Citadel, and then good luck finding a good capping group up there. I've capped it with my monk and my warrior so far, but each time the group has consisted mostly of monks, which is good and bad. Actually, when I went with my monk, we were all monks except for two, I believe. I guess it's possible to find people running the cap also, but it's pretty unlikely since you yourself will need to be present for the capping process, you know, at the end there. What runners usually do, though, is they'll kill all the enemies along the way, if they can. That's a feat upon itself right there. And then they'll come back and they'll get you. But if you were to do something like that, I would expect to pay a pretty penny for something like that. You'd actually be better off, in my opinion, the best thing you could do is probably get some guildies or some friends together. That way you can ensure a balanced group and not just people who are looking to cap that skill for their monk.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street. Man, is this episode 40 already? Wow, that's amazing. I can't believe it. 40. We're, like, almost as old as Loudon now. A couple people asked to be mentioned. They are Galen Shardos, Serpent Master, and Raven Eddie Chelsea. We're talking about monks this week, so I made a video of my monk ascending. I tested a bunch of different methods to see what worked well. The monk's doppelganger does not use either Retribution or Healing Breeze. I heard that it will cast Breeze, though, if it encounters health degen, but for regular damage, you shouldn't have to worry about it. One method that's really easy to use is to just bring Healing Breeze to heal yourself and simply hit the mirror with your wand. It takes longer than a minute to kill it like this, so you will not get the bonus, but it is probably the easiest way to just complete the battle. Another way that I did it was by using Divine Boon, Retribution, Zealot's Fire, Healing Breeze, and Mend Ailment. I cast Divine Boon and Retribution before entering the battle area, so that the enchantments are already up before the battle and you don't have to waste your time casting them while the doppelganger is attacking you. And also, since time freezes now when the cutscenes are playing, what you should do is let your energy recharge fully before you enter into the cinematic. After the cutscene, what I did then was I cast Zealot's Fire, then ran up close to the mirror and started casting my heals on myself. You don't want to cast too fast, though, because if you do, it'll start acting like an AoE, and the mirror will turn and run away from you. So keeping that balance of trying to kill the doppelganger fast and also not triggering the AoE, I was able to do it in about 50 seconds, but it was close. So then the last method that I tried was the fastest of the ones that I did, and it only took about 25 seconds. I brought Orison of Healing, Retribution, Scourge Healing, and a bunch of smiting skills. It doesn't really matter what smiting you bring, but if you want to know, I used Bane Signet, Banish, Holy Strike, Judge's Insight, and Smite. I cast Retribution before the cutscene, and then once in the battle itself, I cast Scourge Healing on the mirror, and just attacked it with every smiting skill that I brought. What this does is Retribution damages the enemy when it attacks you, and then when it starts getting hurt, it'll try to heal itself. But since it's hexed with Scourge Healing, it just keeps hurting itself more no matter what it tries to do. So with that in conjunction with you attacking it, it doesn't stand a chance. Here's a few more details about these couple of skills. Scourge Healing. For 30 seconds, every time target foe is healed, the healer takes 15 to 67 holy damage. You can get it from the quest The Royal Papers in Fisherman's Haven, and you can buy it from Bartok in Drachner's Forge and Dak Vember Lightcamp. You can also capture it from some bosses, but I don't know why you would want to, because it's not an elite skill. Retribution. While you maintain this enchantment, whenever target ally takes attack damage, this spell deals 33% of the damage back to the source, maximum of 5 to 17 damage. It doesn't actually deflect damage so that you don't get hurt, but it does cause the enemy to also get hurt every time it attacks you. You can get it in Prophecies from the quest The Blessings of Balthazar in Ashford Abbey, which is in Pre-Searing, and in Factions from Seeking a Cure in Kenya Province. You can buy it in Tyria from Sir Bertrand in Ascalon and Dak Vember Lightcamp. And you can buy it in Cantha from Zhao Di in Xing Jie Monastery. And that's about it. It might not look like it at first, but the monk is actually a pretty easy class to ascend. So have fun with it. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
This is total blooper reel, isn't it?
Are you just saying that so Loudon doesn't talk too much about himself? Do I hear little ones in the background?
Yeah, you did.
They're baby Loudons.
That's right, mini healers. My minions. For how much I run my mouth, when you just say talk, I'm like, you're on a blank. Okay, so what the hell was I talking about?
You can cut that part out of the recording.
In my studio, bugs fly into my water.
He's like, are you asleep, Sinead?
Total Homer Simpson. Can't talk. Healing.
Seed on three.
Oh, man. I should add a couple beers before this. Didn't we just talk about nothing for about 50 of the last 70 minutes?